This is Paloma and Davey, and we're very excited to be here with Scott Booker, who's co-owner of World's Fair Artist Management and Label Group, owner of Hellfire Marketing, and also just happens to be the Flaming Lips manager. All right, say hello, Scott.
Hello there.
All right, how about a nice open-ended start? You can tell the truth when you answer this question, or you can make something up. Once upon a time, there was this guy named Scott.
Yeah, but that's absolutely true. Oh, I'm supposed to keep going.
Yeah, you got to keep going. Fill in the blanks.
Okay, once upon a time, there was this guy named Scott, and I have always worked, ever since I was a little kid. I think back now, and I even found the bag that carried the newspapers that I used to sell starting out, and it was a newspaper called The Grit, okay? Now, The Grit was this newspaper that was for little old ladies, and it basically had stories of families doing nice things together and how to grow your gardens, and it was probably the most boring magazine ever, and it was 35 cents, and I made 15 cents off each one, and I had to send The Grit back the other 20 cents. Now, I look at this, and I actually still have the little bag. I'm going to frame it and put it on my wall as my introduction to the entertainment industry. And because that was my, I started selling it when it was like at 11 or something, you know?
Uh-huh.
And at first, what I did was every week I'd make about $5 doing it, and I'd buy comic books. But then eventually I became a teenager or preteen or whatever, and started loving rock and roll. And then I bought a record every week. I sold The Grit, made $5 or $6, and then I bought a record, starting with my very first record was Supertramp, Breakfast in America.
Wow.
Still one of my favorite records. I bought it on 8-track. And then not too long after that, it was like Cheap Trick. And then I started buying Beatles records, became addicted to them, and started on that kind of rock and roll world that we're in now. And anyways, what it did, though, was I went from The Grit to shopping every day at my record store all week long, wanting to figure out what I was going to buy when I finally sold The Grits, you know. And I shopped at the record store so much that by the time I was 15, which was the legal age that they could actually hire someone, the manager came to me and said, hey, do you want to, work at the record store? And that's how I got my first record industry job, in a sense, if you want to count that. And I do. I think working in a record store is the most noble thing a human being can do. And because you're introducing people to something that's going to change their lives, and music can do that, and it's a wonderful thing. So that is my beginning. I want people to know out there that you can start doing about anything, and create a path yourself. So I started selling a newspaper, which led me into buying music. Buying music led me into working at a record store. Working at that record store, eventually I got tired of working in a chain store, and then I started working in a mom and pop store, and that's where I met the Flaming Lips, and they shopped there, and I got to be friends with them. And then one day they needed a manager, and actually they needed someone just to pick up the phone for them, and I ended up being that guy.
Great story. I love it. All right, then it actually leads into our next question. That was perfect. Like, you predicted that.
So obviously you spent some time in record stores. What are your thoughts on the decline of the large retail record shops? And what do you think will happen to the mom and pop retail outlets these days?
At first it really bothered me, but now it's like I have more access to more music than I ever have. I think what's going to happen eventually is that there's going to be a subscription service kind of thing going on, like for cable TV. I think eventually people are going to pay $10 a month, and they're going to be able to listen to anything they want, anywhere they want, anyhow they want. Mm-hmm. And there has to be a combination of events happening to make this work. One is that the internet has to be, wirelessly available to anyone, anywhere, at any time. And I think we're within a decade of that happening. The second thing is whichever company deems to start doing this, or maybe it'll be several, but you have to be able to get any music you want all in one place, just like an Amazon. I can buy from any record label. Whereas if you go to iTunes, you still can't get, you know, the Beatles or whatever. Of course, that's going to change soon. But there's many things you still can't get on iTunes for whatever reasons, Radiohead, etc. Same with Rhapsody, which is, you know, a subscription service. But there's still things on there you can't listen to. Now, when we get this combination of events of where the internet's available anywhere, and then our iPods have, you know, Bluetooth or Wi-Fi capability, our cars have Wi-Fi capability to get it, and then our stereos just have it integrated in them at the houses, you know, at our houses and stuff. I think that's when the subscription model of just like, okay, for $10 a month, I literally have every piece of recorded music available to me. That's going to be how people listen to music. Now, it doesn't mean that the record industry ends, because we've still got to convince people to listen to our stuff, and we got to kind of lead them in the right direction. Just because something exists doesn't mean it's, you know, worth listening to, really. So, you know, our job is shifting from getting people to from buying widgets to actually listening, which I kind of find more exciting. And, you know, because that's what it's like working in a record store. Is you try to lead people to the things that they're going to love. I never, as a salesman, I was never interested in selling somebody anything. I was always interested in selling people things that they wanted. And because, it, you know, there was nothing better than selling someone a CD that they never thought, they never would have thought of buying themselves, and then them coming back the next week and being like, that was awesome. What do you got for me next? You know? And that's what, you know, that's how, you know, that's the thing I think that's missing in the record industry, is that sense of service to people, the sense of responsibility to what we're doing. You know, I'm a bit, you know, I come from Oklahoma, so there's a bit of an evangelical thing about me, I guess. And it's like, I am evangelical about music and the artists that I love and the things we do. And I know personally that, you know, music can be a powerful, powerful thing in your life to make you feel great or sad, or help you get over, you know, a problem, whatever it is. You break up with your girlfriend and you're like, gosh, you know, I got to listen to some music. And those things, those are the things that are the great levelers that that make your life worth living. It's one of the many things that does that.
Great. I understand that you believe strongly in word-of-mouth marketing, and obviously the internet is an invaluable resource for bands who are self-promoting. How do you think the music industry will change now that pretty much anyone with a computer could potentially make their own music and promote themselves using networking sites like MySpace and whatnot?
Well, I mean, I think that's already, you know, happening with bands, you know, pushing themselves on MySpace or whatever. It still comes down to, you know, I mean, I get a lot of friends on MySpace, and I actually do listen to everything. And there's maybe one out of every 20 or 30 that I pay attention to, you know. Because you play stuff in the background, and you're like, you just know immediately whether it's something you like or not, you know. And then the ones that you do kind of like, you go back and pay attention to it. I mean, there's been a few things. A Scottish band called After Christmas I like, and I never would have heard of them if it wasn't for MySpace, you know. And you know, and I have a feeling they probably recorded on their own computers or whatever. I mean, I think it just opens the door for even more people to be able to do it. But I don't think that's really changes the shape too much. I mean, if you are a musician type, you know, if you're someone who wanted to make music and had the ability to, it's still, you know, whether you have a computer or not, you still have to know how to play. You still have to know to write a melody and be able to sing. And, you know, you might not have to be as good as you had to, you know, 30 years ago when there weren't so many tricks to fix up what you were doing. But I think that you still have to have that innate thing about you. To be able to create something that's worth listening to, you know, worth people spending their time on. And, you know, so I don't think that is changing so much. I think we've got the same amount of people doing music. It's just that now we're so inundated with the ability to hear people. There was probably just as many bands 20 years ago. It's just now we can hear everything.
Right.
And, And it doesn't mean we want to, you know. So, but we have the ability to, and you know, I think that the good stuff will just rise to the top just because people recognize it. It's just something that we do.
Well, Scott, which do you think plays the biggest role in shaping an artist's future? Dumb luck, fate, or persistence?
It is a combination of those three things. I think that, you know, there's also, you know, some skill involved as well, in the sense of being able to judge opportunities. And this is why people, you know, this is why bands need managers or mm-hmm. someone around them that has a different kind of perspective. I think that when people ask what a manager does, a lot of times the way I describe what I do is I'm the guy that actually filters through everything that comes through, and my job, I think, more than anything, is to pull out the worthwhile opportunities to mm-hmm. present to the artist. And that's a lot of filtering, especially for a band like the Flaming Lips mm-hmm. or whatever. Now, I let Wayne know everything that's going on, but I give him my opinion about stuff, and you know, and hopefully your opinion is what matters. Now, going back to your original question of, like, what was the three things again?
Dumb luck, fate, or persistence.
Dumb luck, fate, or persistence. I don't believe in fate, so I'll throw that one out. So I'll say it's a combination of dumb luck and persistence. Because we are lucky, you know, and then you have to, you know, I would change skill with fate. Mm-hmm. You have to have some skill in the way you deal with the world. Okay. In other words, if you're a band, you know, sometimes it's not your performance that gets you in the club again. It's the fact that you went on stage and off stage on time, mm-hmm. that you're nice to the people that work at the venue, that you make sure that the venue's earning money just like you are, that you think about, it's empathy is what it is. It's you're realizing the situation everyone around you is in just as much as you pay attention to your own. Mm. And the luck side of it, of course, is just random and you never know. I mean, I always say we're the luckiest people in the world. Mm-hmm. The crazy band the Flaming Lips are and the crazy other bands I work with and what I do and be able to do it from Oklahoma, I mean, that's pretty darn lucky.
Mm-hmm.
And then the persistence factor is, I mean, look at, you know, it might not work so well for pop acts like, you know, someone that's inspired to be a Britney Spears. Look, people are going to know whether it's going to happen pretty quick on that. But with a band like the Flaming Lips or even a band like The Cure, or R.E.M., or, you know, whatever. It's like these bands that, you know, formed, and then people were like, they're kind of weird, I don't know about that. And then you just kept going, regardless of what people thought, until people, you know, they just couldn't ignore you anymore. I mean, the fact that there's a street named after the Flaming Lips in Oklahoma mm-hmm. isn't because of luck or skill. That's uh-huh. that's just pure persistence of being here for 20 years, you know, and not leaving and
showing up.
Yeah, exactly.
That's my new theory in life. If you want to do something, you just have to show up there.
Well, that is, I mean, you're so right on that. I mean, it's like there's so many. I think this is funny. It even goes back to the idea of the internet and MySpace and all those things. People think that's enough. Mm-hmm. Oh, I put up a MySpace site, and, you know, then they stop there instead of trying to do more.
Mm-hmm.
People, you know, and that's where the persistence comes in. It's like, you know, it can't just be, oh, I've got the best MySpace page. Well, then you've got to come up with, you know, a reason for mm-hmm. people to go to your MySpace page. And then you have to network with other people, and then you have to reach out and do all sorts of things. You have to just keep thinking. It's mm-hmm. You know, what's the Woody Allen phrase? You know, love is like a shark. It's got to keep moving or it dies. Well, it's the same thing mm-hmm. about marketing your own music or whatever. You got to keep moving. The second you stop, then you die. And by keeping moving, you don't want to keep doing just the same thing
right.
either. I mean, this is one of the great things about the Lips is that, you know, Wayne and the guys are so open to all sorts of opportunities. Hey, there's a, you know, this person emailed saying we should do a Broadway show. I've looked into it. There's this director that's interested. What do you guys think of that? Yeah, let's do it. What a crazy thing, you know? and now it's, I don't know if you've seen the press, but it's like Des McAnuff, who directed Tommy and Jersey Boys and a bunch of other things, is going to direct, and Aaron Sorkin, the writer of all the episodes of The West Wing and A Few Good Men and stuff, is going to write the book, which is their term for the script. And the Flaming Lips provide the music. I mean, it's like...
Who would have predicted it? Yeah, but it's brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you never could have... In a million years, you never would have predicted it.
No.
You know? You just go for it and see what happens.
All right, I'm going to switch gears now. Would you mind telling us about the Oklahoma Creativity Project?
Sure. What we're trying to do in Oklahoma, there's a group of like-minded people that are trying to accomplish several things. We're looking at culture, commerce, and education in the state, and we want to become a leader in the world, even the universe, of changing the way people think about all sorts of things. And we believe that creativity is something that most people don't recognize in themselves, and we want people to start doing that, and we want people to embrace creativity and use it to change, you know, their everyday lives. We need to change the way the education system works. We need to change the way business people think. Instead of putting the creative person in a corner and just listening to them when you're in trouble over something, we need to have that person talking to us. And it shouldn't just be that one person. Everyone in your office is creative. We just don't listen well enough. In culture, the same thing. We need to embrace the people that might be seem a little weird to us at first and change stuff. So what the Creativity Project is about, enabling a lot of those situations to happen. One of the things, I'm working on that is tied to the Creativity Project is I'm looking to find, and I think I found someone who's going to donate a building for a couple of years where I can put artists and bands, and I'm trying to put a computer suite in there, and even a loft where if a band is driving through town to perform and they're playing at one of the little bars, instead of having to sleep on someone's floor, they can stay at this loft, you know.
Wow.
There's some areas of town that aren't as great as others, and they're trying to gentrify those areas. And a lot of times what happens traditionally is artists move into these places, and then they gentrify, meaning they make it feel safer and nicer. And then they create a situation where the artist can't afford to live there anymore, you know, which doesn't work so well for the artist. But hey, you know,
they tried.
Nevertheless, yeah, we try, you know. So I'm trying to do that here. I've got a couple guys that are really interested in the concept and look like they're going to give me a building to work in. And then kind of what you were talking about earlier with MySpace and stuff like that, I think that we're really open for... I really do believe we can do anything here. Why do TV shows have to be made in New York and L.A.?
Mm-hmm.
Let's build a couple sound stages and do it here in Oklahoma. You know, content is king, and people need content more than anything right now. There's more channels, more stations than there ever has been. We're running out of reruns we can watch. You can get every single thing on DVD that's ever been made, mod to, every episode of The Simpsons, whatever. It's like, why repeat them on TV when I have all 9 seasons, you know, sitting in my closet? Every episode of Star Trek, you know? So, I think that we need to create a situation where people can do stuff here and in Oklahoma and then they won't want to leave, which is another big problem, is what a lot of people term as the brain drain, and people leaving the state after they go out, get out of college, because they just think they can't do it from here. And we got to change that mentality. I think a lot of it's just purely psychological and frankly marketing. We just need to market the way we think and how we do things differently.
Thank you, Scott. What do you love best about Oklahoma? It's a beautiful state. I'm sure there are many things that you love about, but what do you love best about Oklahoma?
Wow. Yeah, I mean, my favorite, just the quality of life here is the greatest thing ever. I mean, I travel the world. I love London. I love L.A. I don't really like New York so much. Mm. Barcelona, whatever. But I don't think you could have the same quality of life in any one of those cities as you do here. I have a big house and a big yard. I have an office building that I've bought,
mm-hmm.
and I don't make a lot of money. I do fine, but it's like, doing what I do, one year is great, the other year isn't. And, in a way, living in a place like Oklahoma actually creates a situation where I can take more risk because I don't have so much capital put into just existing, If you live in L.A., I guarantee you, your rent in L.A. or mortgage is less than my office building and my home mortgage put together. And I probably have 10 times the space you do.
Mm-hmm.
And, I easily could have moved to either one of those cities or Chicago or Dallas or wherever. But I never felt like I, A, needed to, and B, I never felt like I wanted to. There wasn't anything I was missing here. Sure, maybe more shows go to other places or whatever, but, most people tend to go to one or two shows a month anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about what shows up here that I want to see. Just like, if I lived in L.A., I'd probably just go to one or two shows a month.
Mm-hmm.
Even though there's something available every night. All the movies that I want to see either come out in the theaters here, or if they don't, they're on DVD so soon, and frankly, it's so hard to go see movies in theaters anymore because people are so loud. And, my setup at the house is just as good as a movie theater. So I can just watch it at home with surround sound, and it's great, And the restaurants here are amazing. I think we might not have 10 Indian restaurants, but we have 3, We might not have 20 sushi restaurants, but we have 4, and it's just a great place to live.
Cool. All right, well, we'll move on to our grand finale. We're almost done here. These are supposed to be the fun questions, so you can decide whether they're fun for you to answer or not. Okay. And I'll start. If you could have a supernatural power, what would it be?
Wow. I'm a huge fan of comic books. I'll just admit it, I'm a nerd. And, I've been on Star Trek. Did you know this?
We knew that, yes.
Okay, yeah. I brag about that. Most people wouldn't, but I do because I think it's funny. But I'm going to go with something obvious. I'd love to read people's minds. And that would be my power.
Scott, if you could leave a time capsule the size of a microwave oven that would be found centuries from now, and it would represent the current state of the music industry, what would you put inside it?
Well, a bunch of flaky lip stuff. it depends on whether I'm trying to represent my view of it or the reality. I would put my 2-terabyte hard drive that has 15,000 CDs I've uploaded on it. That's what I put in there.
Very good. All right. If you could arrange a jam session with any 3 musicians, living or dead, who would you choose?
Wow. Okay. Let me think. That's an interesting one. I've been able to meet so many of my rock and roll heroes. Just the other day, the Who played in Oklahoma, and we got to hang out with Pete Townsend.
Cool.
Wow.
The greatest thing in the world, and Pete's so sweet. So I would have Pete Townsend on my list. And in the first place, let me just tell you that I think jam sessions are horrible. So let's change it.
All right, if you could just hang out and drink beer with any three musicians, how's that?
That I like.
All right.
That I like. Okay. Well, Pete would be there. George Harrison, and let's get Wayne Coyne in there.
All right.
What was the first concert you ever attended?
Cheap Trick, Dream Police Tour.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. All right, and now for our grand finale. Will you please give us your best pirate impression?
Arr, matey. There you go.
Thank you. Thank you for being a good sport with that one. Any final words?
Listen to the music you love. And never stop trying to find new things. You know, so many of us stop after college, just listen to the same 20 records. And I'm always surprised that every year I never think I'm going to find the next thing that's going to be my favorite band. And every year I always do. So keep listening.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Scott.